Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm Pat Sloan, and I'm very excited to have Janice Ryan from the website Better Off Thread. I love her work, I love her style, and I love her tagline. Her tagline is a Pennsylvania Dutch girl living on the West Coast, and that immediately just, you know, connects to my heart because I'm a Pennsylvania Dutch girl. And so, you know, if nothing else, we have that in common. So, Janice, thank you for coming to the show.
Oh, you're welcome, Pat. Hello.
Tell me a little bit about your background. You know, how did you discover quilt making?
Well, I've been sewing garments since I was a little girl. I have lots of fond memories of sewing with my mom. Mm-hmm. And then I went to college for costume design. I remember my first job out of college, I was working in a costume shop, and one of the women tried to get me into quilting. Mm-hmm. I cut out all the little plastic templates, mm-hmm. and I was going to sew it on Metro. I had like an hour-long commute every day, mm-hmm. and then I never got past the templates. So I think they're actually still sitting at my parents' house. So then flash forward about 12 years later, I was pregnant with my son, and I was looking for a quilt, and all the quilts I liked were really expensive. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can probably do that. I've been sewing for a long time. I usually sew garments, but,
right.
you know, probably learn how to quilt. So I made him a quilt, and I was hooked. I loved everything about it. I loved being able to mix all the fabrics together, which you don't usually get to do in garment sewing. And I loved using the rotary cutter and the ruler to cut everything
yes.
out, all the small pieces. So, and then my friend Allison was telling me about a new modern quilt group that was being put together in LA. So that was the LA Modern Quilt Guild. So I started going to the meetings there, and I just was so excited. These were my people, and it was just something that I was just so in love with. It was like an addiction.
Do you still make clothing?
I do. I make clothing for my kids. Mm-hmm. Not often for myself. I just don't have a lot of time. And my kids have already started, you know, they'll be like, I want this costume, I want
right.
this princess dress. So I do that a lot. And I'm hoping once they're a little older, I can do more costume designing again.
Well, that is really cool. I mean, I made clothing, you know, because that's how I learned to sew, was to make clothing. So it's, mm-hmm. but I don't do that anymore. I gave that up. It's like, quilting is more fun.
You know, I like the quilting. You don't have to fit somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you're doing costume design, you know, when you're quilting, you don't have an actor putting input into the into the item. So it's, yeah, in some ways, it's more fulfilling because of all the wonderful colors and fabrics, and it's in some ways easier because you don't have to fit anybody.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit, describe your style, because you have somewhat of a varied style. You do a lot of work for manufacturers, and that has a particular style. And then you have a sort of another look that is more a little bit more contemporary, even.
Yeah, I guess technically I'm a modern quilter, but I don't really think of myself as that. I think I like modern fabrics, and I love to use more traditional patterns. Mm-hmm. And I also like to reinvent traditional patterns in a more modern way. So, and then definitely when I am working with manufacturers, I want to do something a little more traditional because I think that appeals to a broader base of people.
Right. When you're doing work for them, you have a customer base that is their customer base for that style of fabric. And so, you know, you have to meet that to some extent.
Right, right.
Now, yeah. I've forgotten, are you teaching locally or across the country? Do you go out and teach?
I've taught at Sew Modern several times. I haven't taught lately. It's really hard for me to get down there on weekends mm-hmm. Because of my kids are only 3 and 5 years old. So I don't really want to leave yeah. them very often.
No. Well, you do a lot of things on your blog. And one of them that is just so fascinating to me is a lot of your paper piecing, because do you find that people are a little nervous about paper piecing?
They are. I love paper piecing. And it's funny, on Instagram right now, mm-hmm. there's a group of girls that started a sew-along for my Spiral Geese Mini. And it's both paper piecing and you're doing applique, you're doing a curve. And they're scared. They're very yeah. scared. And they hashtagged it the Spiral Geese Swear Along. Because they're all expecting to be, you know, swearing while they're making this mini. And it's funny to see them as they're doing it and as they're finishing it. And they're like, that wasn't that hard. I barely mm-hmm. swore.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people just, they get it in their head, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. And it's something they've never done. They're afraid to try something new. But with paper piecing, it really opens up a whole new world of patterns.
So what are some tips that you feel people might not know about, you know, something we might not know about for paper piecing?
Definitely start simple. Start with a simple little flying geese block. And then it's taking your time. I would definitely set up some sort of station for yourself. I like to have my sewing machine in front of me. And then on one side, I have a little cutting station. And then on the other side, I have a little ironing station. Because when you're paper piecing, you need to sew, then you need to trim, then you need to iron. And okay. it's really important to do all of those steps so that your paper piecing turns out nice and flat and looks really nice.
So you're ironing. Tell me where the ironing happens for you when you're paper piecing.
When I'm paper piecing, I'll have sometimes a little ironing board set up on the side.
Or okay, so
I'll
right at your
have
machine.
By my machine.
Yeah.
So that way, you know, you're sewing one little seam, mm-hmm. then you're trimming to a quarter inch, and then you're pressing with a dry iron. So you don't want to be getting up and down and up and down. Mm-hmm. And actually, the way I have it set up right now is I sew standing up. So I just have the ironing board set up right next to my machine.
You sew standing up?
Yeah, I wasn't before, but we just redid the kitchen and uh-huh. we had this extra table. So I had been sewing on my dining room table. Mm-hmm. And so we moved the sewing machine into the back room. It was time to get it off the dining room table. And we had this extra cutting table that had been from the kitchen. And I set the sewing machine on that. And I'm like, oh, well, we could cut down the legs eventually. But I'm actually really enjoying sewing standing up. It's weird.
Wow.
I know. But I don't usually sew for hours. I sew for little increments of time here and there through the day because of the kids and I'm busy. Mm-hmm. So I find it really nice to not have to sit down all day. You know, I can just go over, do a little sewing, walk away. So it's only been for 2 months, so we'll see how it goes. But I have the ironing board set up right next to the sewing machine, and, you know, I feel like I can get more done that way.
Yeah.
And my husband works standing up, too, so I guess we'll just... weird that way.
People do it for demos and things like that, but for their everyday, you know, it's like an interesting concept because some people can't sit for very long periods of time for a variety of reasons. So try sewing standing up. Oh my gosh.
I wasn't sure if it'd be possible. You gotta get used to the, you know, working the pedal standing up, I don't think I would do it if I was doing hours of sewing, but usually it's very mm-hmm. short little seams. Garment sewing might be different, or I was doing curtains, and that was a little more difficult because the seams are long. But when you're just sewing these short little seams, it's really not a problem to sew standing up, and it's really good on my back.
Yeah. Oh, very – okay, now we can all try this. Courtesy of Janice today. That is amazing. So I want to talk about you have a pattern you did for the Moda Bake Shop called Sunnyside Diamonds, which uh-huh. is just glorious. I really like it.
Oh, thank you. That was a fun pattern.
Yeah, Moda is a huge sponsor of the show. And so, you know, I'd like to know if you can just tell me a bit about a trick to doing that one, because, you know, it's got kind of what looks like a lot of slanting going on.
Right. Yeah, that's basically, it's a lot of Lone Star panels. Mm. So you're strip piecing, you're sewing all these strips together, and then you're cutting them on a 45-degree angle. So when I'm cutting strips like that, I like to starch everything really nicely so that when you're cutting on the 45-degree angle, your bias doesn't stretch as you're trying to piece everything together. So the starching really helps. Also, as you're cutting your angle, every two cuts, check your angle, because by the end, you can get really off with your angle. And okay. then you have these strips you've made, and they are not going to fit together at all. So double check your angle and starch.
That's good. That's good. You don't do starch. I may have missed this. Did you starch before you started the whole process or after you started sewing units together, then starch them?
Sew the strips together, and as you're pressing the seams to the side or open, you would starch the strip sets that are sewn together.
Okay. All right. All right. And to, we want to be sure we get everything in. You have a project coming out later this year. You want to tell me about it? Something new?
Yes. I have a book coming out with Stash, and Yay. It's called The Modern Medallion Workbook. Mm-hmm. And my co-author is Beth Basalo, and I'm really excited about it. There's 9 other designers who've designed medallions for the book. So the first part of the book is 11 different medallion patterns, modern medallion patterns. Mm-hmm. And the second part of the book goes in depth. It's a workbook about paper piecing curves, how to take the different borders in the patterns and make your own medallion. Mm. So it's a beginner can use it, but it's not a beginner's book. It'll appeal mm-hmm. to everybody. And I think it's really great for getting people to go one step further with their quilting and learn how to do some techniques that they may have been afraid to try before.
Oh, I love medallions. That sounds great. I mean, I love that you've given people some information that they can make it their own so they can branch out from the basics. So I want to tell people where you live online, betteroffthread.com. And you write there and you have some things they can check, some tutorials and stuff, right?
Yeah, there's tutorials, there's patterns, inspiration, whatever
yes.
you want to.
Lots of it. Janice, this has been so wonderful. I really
Thank
appreciate
you, so much,
you coming
Pat.
On. Yes.
Thank
Everybody
you.
Needs to visit Janice out at betteroffthread.com. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about alphabet quilts in a minute.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Reaching out from the heartland of the United States with quality programming, this is TokiNet Radio.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we're going to talk alphabets, alphabet quilts, which to me, this is just amazing because I love letters and text. And I think I found another kindred spirit in Janet Stone, because Janet has been creating a series of quilts with letters. And so I am very excited. Janet, thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me, Pat.
You know, I just am so excited. Have you always loved the alphabet? You know, I'm kind of curious.
I've always loved the alphabet ever since I learned how to write as a little kid.
My favorite book was the alphabet book. You know, it had like each.
Yeah.
I still have
yeah.
it. Oh, how cool. So you have a little story about what happened to sort of create this series of alphabet quilts you're doing. Tell me how the first one kind of got started.
Well, the first one was actually made for a wall in my house. I haven't had a long, narrow wall that went down to from the upstairs to the downstairs, and I thought something needed to be on that wall. And so I decided I would make a quilt to put on that wall, and made the quilt, and it was kind of different. It wasn't kind of your typical quilt. It wasn't anything I had seen in any quilt show, and so I entered it in a quilt show in Minnesota, and I figured it'd be a good excuse for a trip to Minnesota, and I won like 3 ribbons on the quilt, and I was just immediately hooked on making quilts for show. And I had so many other ideas for alphabet quilts that I just decided I was going to make 26 of them.
I just love this story. I just love it. 26 quilts. And they're not – have you ever entered before? Was that the first time you entered a show?
That was the first time I'd ever entered. They had a category at the Minnesota show that was for the first time you'd ever entered a show. And I thought, oh, perfect. I'll just enter that and see what happens. Had no expectations of anything,
right.
And was just overwhelmed when I saw all the ribbons on my quilt.
Your work is extraordinary. You do beautiful, beautiful work.
Well, thank you.
So let's talk about the quilts themselves, because some of them, they're all different. You're not making the same style, right?
No, and they all have the whole – some people think I'm making them specifically for a letter of the alphabet, but they all have the alphabet in them. I'm going to make 26.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have the alphabet in them one way or the other. Sometimes
right,
it's more obvious and sometimes it's less obvious.
That's the part that I love. It's like when you sent me a few pictures of your quilts, I'm like, wow, okay, where is the alphabet in this one? Sometimes they're peeking out. Sometimes they're super obvious. Which letter are you on currently?
I am on quilt number 15. I'm in the process of quilting it as we speak, actually.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about how you're designing them. I mean, are you doing it as you go to each one, or do you have like a big notebook of ideas? What's your process?
Yeah, I've got kind of a notebook that I keep ideas in. I get inspired by different things, so it just depends on what I'm doing at the time. A friend of mine has sent me a pile of hand-dyed fabric that I'm just dying to get into. So it just kind of depends on what I happen to be inspired from, and I pretty much design everything the old-fashioned way, just with pencil and mostly graph paper. I do have EQ 6 or 7, I think, on my computer that I really don't know how to use all that well, but I do use it occasionally for color design. I'll kind of mock up a part of my quilt on there and kind of finagle color with that. But as far as the actual designing, I do it the old-fashioned way.
And yours are not a pattern. They're just unique, one-of-a-kind pieces.
Yeah, I make them all individually. I made one of them, the 13th one. I was asked by the quilt show with Alex Anderson and Ricky Timms to do their block of the month, which I did. And so that one's the only one that I've ever done into a pattern. They're kind of complicated, so I've been asked to do patterns before, but they're so complicated that pattern making is a whole nother thing that
right.
I just am not really that into. So I did it the one time with the block of the month just to see if I could do it and just to say I did it once, but
been
yeah,
there,
I
done that.
I don't make patterns of them.
No. So let's talk a little bit about techniques that are on there, because, you know, from the pictures, I can see that, you know, you have a lot of applique. What style applique do you like to do?
My favorite is raw edge applique. I use the Steam-O-Seam Lights 2 for the fusible, and I have a Bernina that I just love, their blanket stitch, so I just do a blanket stitch around the raw edge applique. I tried hand-turned applique early on in my quilting career, and just it took too much time. I'm not too much into hand work. If I can figure out a way to do something by on the machine, I'd rather do that than do it by hand. I do a lot of embellishments, so I'll sew on embellishments by hand, but that's about the extent of my hand work.
So you're not doing like any embroidery or anything like that with by
hand?
No,
I do a lot of what I call free motion embroidery, which, you know, is just I have the free motion foot on the machine and just go back and forth and back and forth until I get the thick enough line that I want to get. And I do that occasionally, but no, I don't. I rarely do any sort of hand embroidery or anything.
Well, the one quilt has, it's the one that's red, which has sort of a taupe border and all the blocks are on point. And your alphabet is actually, looks like, because I only see a picture of this one, looks like embroidery. But is that all quilted? All the alphabet
Yeah, that
is
was
quilted?
Done that way. And the little swirls that are in that quilt. Yeah, that was done that way. It was just, I drew the letters and the swirls on the background and then just quilted over it, just went over and over and over until I got the line thick enough to how I wanted it to be. It's really pretty easy. I guess it's kind of like thread painting, what a lot of people call thread painting.
Right. So it's not intimidating to you then? You're using like really high contrast for that particular one because it has cream and you really want all that lettering to stand out.
Right.
So it's red.
Yeah.
You're
kind of enjoy doing it. It's kind of like free motion, but you just keep going back and forth. And I use like a 40 weight polyester thread usually when I do that, which has a really nice sheen in it, and it'll go over itself like that pretty easily. So it gets a nice thick line.
Well, that's good. Now you told me that you have sort of an interesting way that you're adhering some of the blocks or some of the units to your quilt. Can you tell me about
that? Well, some of the things, like on that particular quilt, Red Letter Days is the name of that quilt that you're talking about. I think that's the one you've got on your blog. The blocks were made separately. They were pieced or appliqued separately, and then they were attached to the background, just like sewn around, and then I'll cut out the part of the background that is behind the block. But I do a lot of them like that because I like kind of different settings on things and things that are too complicated to try to piece into the background. So I'll actually like do a little edge, almost like a binding around each block. It's just the fabric. I don't quilt them. And then I'll just applique the whole block onto the background.
Ah, I bet people stand in front of that quilt, Janet, for hours trying to figure out how you pieced that.
Because that's how it was done. I've done several like that.
Well, that the one with the B, was it done like that too?
Yeah, that was done like that also. Yeah, it kind of gives you a little more flexibility in how you kind of position the blocks on the background.
Now, are you exhibiting every one that you make? Are they going out to a show?
They've all been in quilt shows, and they've all of them have won some pretty nice prizes. One of them, I think the third one I made, only won like a third place and didn't win at one show. So I sort of retired it because there was a lot of issues with it. But yeah, they've all been in shows and all won some pretty nice prizes. I've been very fortunate.
That is what is your biggest prize? Do you remember?
Well,
like, ribbon.
The biggest accolade is that Red Letter Days. That one, it won a couple of really nice prizes, but it also won the Masterpiece Quilts Award from the National Quilting Association, which is a pretty short list of some pretty impressive quilters. I felt like a small fish in a big pond when that happened.
That's
Linda McEwen, who's a pretty amazing long-arm quilter, and she's also a judge, had judged several of my quilts at different shows, and she emailed me one time and asked me if she nominated one of my quilts for that Masterpiece Quilt Award, and I didn't really know that much about it, but I said sure, and that one was fortunate enough to win, so that was a pretty big deal.
That's a huge deal. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That is That'll keep you making quilts, huh?
Yeah. it was pretty amazing. And I was number 27 on, I think they've been doing that since 1980-something. And
wow.
I was the 27th person that got that.
Wow.
So it's a short list of some pretty amazing quilters.
So you actually have other hobbies. I can't even believe that you have other hobbies. But you spin, too.
Well, I used to spin. I don't do that much anymore. Yeah, I used to be a very avid spinner. I needle pointed with the yarn that I made. I didn't knit or any. I don't know how to knit, mm-hmm. but I kind of gave that up just because you could produce so much yarn and needlepoint doesn't take that much yarn. And then I kind of got into cross stitching for a long time. I did that before I got hooked on quilting. And of course, most of my cross stitch was kind of reproduction samplers, which all had alphabets in them.
Well, you know what? Your pieces, I can see your needlework in some of your pieces.
I kind of get a lot of inspiration from mm-hmm. cross stitch samplers and things.
Well, Janet, this has been so much fun. What is your quilt that's at a show right now that people might be able to see?
Well, I have one that's in the AQS show in Albuquerque that's actually happening this week, I believe. That is called No L, because
Great.
It doesn't have an L in it.
Right.
then I've got a couple that are in the Road to California show, which is in the next couple weeks, I think. So I don't remember which ones I sent, but I've got two in that show.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Pat. Good to talk to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Just talking to Janet has inspired me. I need to get some more letters onto my quilts, alphabets and stuff. So the second half of the show, I am going to do a sort of deep dive. I've invited Kimberly Imo to come on and chat with me in sort of in-depth on a few things. So this is a lot of fun. We get to really, really go into the topic. So Kimberly, thank you for being here.
Hey, Pat, how are you? And I'm thrilled to be with you.
Oh, thank you. You are just a doll. You are so sweet.
Now, well, that goes both ways, you know that.
So we're going to do a couple different sort of more in-depth topics. Your studio is featured in American Patchwork and Quilting magazine, the current issue. All about storage, because
right.
you, my dear, are the storage queen.
Partly because I've moved so many times and had to set up so many studios. But, yeah, I think I've gotten a lot of experience of knowing what works and what doesn't in small spaces.
Yeah, and this is the January-February 2015 issue that's I think out right now, so people can go look for that. All right, so because you moved so much, your family was military family, you moved all over the place. When you finally have the home you're in now, you were like,
right.
I'm getting a studio.
Right, exactly. In fact, the hubby said, you know, this is finally we're going to stay put somewhere, design what you want. So that was kind of a nice treat.
Now,
but I still had a budget.
You still had a budget. But now I want to talk about what people can do about with some certain products, because you went in and just designed the whole thing from scratch, you know, and we can't all do that. We'd love to, but, you know, you have good ideas about how to organize certain specific things.
And make them easily accessible. So for me, it was, and I chose a room in our home that was actually right up front by the front door because it had lots of good lighting. And it's really only about 16 by 17. It's not a great big room, had great lighting, but I decided I could do it by making every space count or every inch count. So when I was designing a wall of cupboards, it was important to me to make sure I could access the stuff underneath, because there's been a lot of places where people, they put stuff down in cupboards or drawers, and then they can't, you know, it's uncomfortable to bend down or get down on the floor and pull stuff out. So one of the things I thought would be really neat was to have them on rollers and to make the shelves pull out. So you could actually access, you know, get access to the stuff in the deep, dark recesses.
That's a good idea, because you can do that inexpensively, can't you?
You sure can, absolutely. Yeah. There's lots of great, even, you know, some of these discount stores or discount change stores, you can get those easily, those little plastic bins and things, actually on rollers. So that's, they're pretty cheap, too. You know, or the like California closet systems are not particularly that name brand, but you know those closet systems, they have those pull out things. So trying to make, you know, the cupboards or the things that people stuff their fabric or their supplies back into, but then they forget it's back there because it's just, you know, hard to get at it. You want to make sure that you can pull them out. So that was important to me. And I do use a lot of like plastic bins and things.
So are you, I mean, I know that you personally are a very tidy, neat person. This is kind of your core person. So what can, you know, for the people who, you know, really aren't like that, like some of us, you know, what, when you have bins, are you, you know, what is a tip we can do with the bins to help us get control of the chaos?
Try to organize them by type, like all your Notions, or keep all your rotary blades, your replacement blades all together. And I, you know what, I also use tins, like leftover cookie tins or you know, candy tins, things that you get, you know, at Christmas for gifts. You know, I use those tins all the time. That's another thing that, you know, kind of repurposing that you can store your things in, or I'll keep all my threads together. I actually use those plastic matchbox cases for my threads. Some of them I put on those little wood spools that are very inexpensive to pick up. Again, it's about organizing and just keeping everything together. So all my rulers are together in one spot, and just trying to keep them separated by type so that I can easily find my, you know, my tin full of scissors or does that make sense? You know, or, and I also keep a neat little tote, very inexpensive. It's a little tote I picked up at a discount fabric store that I keep, the most used tools, like my seam rippers, my favorite snips, a little, a small ruler, tape measure, things like that are all in that, that little tote. And it's always easily accessible. So I don't have to go digging for these things every time I want to sit down and I have 10 minutes to sew.
I like the tote idea because I think everybody, well, of course, we probably all have totes. You probably don't even have to go buy one.
Right, you do.
The idea of what to actually put in it and why it's useful, that's...
Well, the things, and again, just kind of think about what do you use most often, and keep those things out and handy and accessible so you don't have to waste precious sewing time going hunting for those things. So always keep a rotary cutter handy. Always keep a little mat right next to my sewing machine, you know, just a small one. You know, just little things like that so I don't really have to go digging for things when I want to get something done.
And then also, you know, I noticed like you have a great, if people go to your website, KimberlyIMO.com, you have a place where you can see pictures of your studio and pictures of your organization. So what do you have for your sewing machines? You have hoops and other things like that. How do you handle those? Because you're not using them every day.
Now, those are the things. That's a great question, Pat, because those are the things that I will actually put in those bottom drawers, or the things that I don't use a lot, I will put in the back of a cupboard or in that bottom drawer, or, you know, tuck underneath something. Sometimes some of those great big hoops, I even store standing up next to my desk, you know, so it just kind of slides in an area that's out of the way, and I'm you know, don't use them that often. So I try to keep the things I use a lot, like my rotary cutters, you know, really handy in a top drawer right where I know where they are, and I can just get to it in a flash. And the things you don't use as much, those are the things you can store in those bottom drawers or the back of the cupboard or the top of the shelf, you know, where it's harder to get to.
Now, do you have any, like, method to the madness for remembering where you put them? Because I can just see this. I'm like, okay, I'm going to put these hoops in the back of this shelf because I never use them. And the day I want them, I'm like, where did I put the hoops?
Label makers are good for that. I don't have go so far as having a little chart, but I do actually kind of have like a list of things, and I have it taped up on the inside of one of those cupboard doors where, you know, it will tell kind of what's in that wall of cupboards. Now, the big things like batting and, you know, the yardage, I just keep downstairs in a closet. Things that, you know, just takes up a lot of space. And batting's one of those, and I do, you know, kind of stock up on that. I do keep that out of the way, and I don't let that kind of stuff clutter up the other things. I keep more implements, the rulers and the cutters and things like that. The mats, handy in that small space, but the actual yardage and things, that stays downstairs in a closet.
So how do you store your fabric? Are you like a by color? Are you by style?
Actually, I do. I store it by color or type. I have one cupboard of nothing but batiks because I'm a batik nut. But I store all my batiks together, and I do have them organized by color, you know, and I try to put, like, all my whites or tone-on-tones and off-whites all together and sort them that way. Just so it's easier to find what I'm looking for. But I'm also, they are in cupboards, and I do have a front on them. I know it's not as pretty as being able to see them, but I want to make sure that they don't get exposed to light or dust or, you know, so it, because some of those things I've learned in the past when I had yardage stored where it was the sun was getting to it. Then when I unfolded it, there was a little, like, you know, places where it had faded. So I do keep them behind closed doors.
Now, you also work a lot with pre-cuts, and you know, they stack on themselves, you know, like jelly rolls will stack nicely, but, you know, do you keep those, you know, together?
Those are handy.
Yeah,
I keep those. I keep them stacked, actually, just the way it shows in the magazine as they took pictures on pull-out drawers, because I use pre-cuts all the time. They're my go-to when I just am ready to work on something fun or I've got a new idea. That's typically where I'll go first, even before I go to the yardage, just because I enjoy them so much. I can't stop.
You can't stop. No, you can't.
It's like Lay's potato chips. You can't stop once you get started with them.
Yeah. And one of the fun things, if you know, Kimberly has a lot of books, and several of them have patterns for pre-cuts, and Moda Bake Shop also has patterns for pre-cuts. And also the Moda Bake Shop tells you what all the measurements are, so that if you're not sure, well, what is a layer cake, you can go to the Moda Bake Shop.
It's like pre-cuts 101. They have it all spelled out there, which I love. And kind of some great ideas about what you can do with all those things, all those different kinds of pre-cuts. Which is, you know, really fabulous. I find the best thing to do is combine those, you know, put a layer cake and a jelly roll together, because it kind of opens up double the design opportunities by combining those.
Right. Could you have a big square, like, you know, for charm packs or layer cakes, and then the jelly rolls or the strips. So, okay. So I'm going to switch gears just a little bit on now, Kimberly, because I want you to tell me about your fabulous quilt that won the best modern quilt in 2014 at the AQS show. I mean, it's just fantastic. Tell us a little bit about that.
Fire and Ice. That was a quilt that I had in my head for a long time. And finally, I used EQ software and drafted it out. And again, it's just made with 2.5-inch strips. And I happen to use all batiks, but just, you know, tried to combine the cool and warm tones together and left a lot of background space for the quilting, which was beautifully done by Judy Madsen of Green Fairy Quilts. So, and that's my favorite quilt of all time.
Yeah. And it's big.
It is. It is almost 80 inches square. It is large.
Yeah, I think if anybody sees just the photo of it, you might think, oh, it's a wall hanging. But no, it is impressive.
No. It is really big, and it's heavy. You know, there's just a lot of thread in it.
Yeah. When you were designing that, you know, how did you work through? You said you did it in EQ, but did you sketch first in advance and in a pad or something?
That's a great question. No, I actually was still using EQ. I started very basically with just a Lone Star, and then I broke it up into four quadrants and started rotating those blocks around. The other thing I did was I took out all the colors. So I worked in black, white, and gray, just worked in grayscale, and took that quarter of a Lone Star portion of a block and just kept multiplying it and rotating it until I got the design looking really great just in a grayscale. And then it was really fun to, you know, add in the colors. But really, it just started by just kind of letting my mind wander and just playing with that quadrant and just, you know, multiplying the blocks and editing. Actually, when I started out, it was a lot more detailed. But because I knew this was going to be more of a modern quilt, it's kind of a minimalist effect. So I kept editing and pulling blocks out, which left all that background space.
I think that's fascinating. It started with a Lone Star because you do a lot with Lone Stars.
I do. I love diamonds. I think diamonds and pre-cuts are just made for each other. I just think that's an untapped potential of, you know, just so many different design ideas of using those diamonds and pre-cuts. And again, I was doing it based on those 2.5-inch strips because I just love working with them.
You need to meet Janice that I talked to at the earlier in the show, because that woman is not afraid of anything. She's sewing all kinds of stuff together. That's
her quilts are beautiful.
I know. So what we're going to do is, Kimberly, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I asked on my Facebook group for a bunch of questions. I asked people what stumps you about quilt making? What are the things you have questions on? And so I sent Kimberly.
Perfect.
Sent you this list, and you were like, yes, because you're going to share with us some tips and things about how to do that. And also, just in case, I don't want to miss this, but people can take workshops with you online at craftsy.com too. So
Yes. I have four different classes on there.
Yeah, so if you hear something, you know, that you want to know more, take a class with Kimberly, you can do that online. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
see what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and Kimberly Imo is here. Yay, Kimberly! All right.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, we have some questions. Just, I put them sort of in order of how you might be doing things, you know, so rather than jumping around.
I was so impressed with the questions that you had when I was reading through the list. These were all great questions.
Yeah, I have
really excellent.
I have a lot of people who are new or people who have done maybe a specific type of quilt and haven't really branched out. So, you know, these questions come from a whole variety of people. So let's start at the beginning. So one of the questions that I thought was really, really good was, you know, what about preparing the fabric? You know, why is it important to prepare it? How do you prepare it? What's a good method? You know, what is good practice for preparing before you start to work with it?
Well, if I can, I always like to pre-wash my fabrics. I really do. If I have yardage, it goes into the washer and into the dryer before I ever get to it. But when I'm pressing those fabrics after they've been washed, I like to use magic sizing or, you know, just fabric sizing, spray sizing. Starch works too. I just have found that sizing works great for me. It doesn't leave a residue, and it's also not a food source for critters because it's synthetic. Yeah. So I really like sizing.
So the wrinkles. Now, some people, you know, they may not be washing in advance and they may not be, you know, doing all that. But tell me why it's important to have smooth fabric.
Well, you can't cut accurately if your fabric is wrinkled or rumpled, and you really want it flat and crisp. So even if you don't pre-wash, you should still press those wrinkles out. And if you've got stubborn wrinkles, you know, and you don't have the spray sizing or the starch, then I would recommend moistening it a little bit or using like a spray bottle, an empty Windex bottle that you filled with water and spritzing it or hitting it with a shot of steam, because you really want your fabrics as flat and crisp and wonderful as possible so that you get the most accurate cuts when you're rotary cutting.
Yeah, and I think that's why people might run into trouble is because they're just like, oh, I'm in a hurry. Oh, it looks pretty smooth, you know. So, okay.
No, you really need to do that. That's one thing that's going to make your quilting improve like dramatically right away.
So let's talk about the cutting, because people, you know, there are like about 800,000 types of rulers out there, at least. And some have gription on the bottom, some don't. Some people have had rulers since the beginning of time, and they're still using the same ones.
Right.
So, you know, the problem is people have is that they slip or they feel like they slip. What are some good habits?
I think actually for me, the most important thing you can do is make sure that you know how to rotary cut accurately and maybe take a refresher course either through your local quilt shop or on Craftsy or you know, wherever, just so that you know that you're cutting really accurately. But the next thing that you can do, I think, and I've seen some quilters actually sit down and rotary cut. I don't believe that you can be accurate when you're just sitting down, because your body isn't over the top of it. So you're kind of looking at everything distorted. Mm-hmm. If you're standing up and you center your weight over the top of your fabrics and you're cutting it at a good height, if possible, you know, like a kitchen counter height or, you know, You need to have something at a good height where you're not, you know, bending over and ruining your back. That way you can center your weight over it and use your hand. Your hand is your best friend as far as keeping your rulers from slipping. What I like to do is I cut right-handed, but on my left hand where I'm holding the rotary, the ruler itself, I take my pinky and I put it off the ruler and onto the fabric right next to it. So my pinky kind of locks it in place. Mm-hmm. And I find that's a really good way to help steady the ruler and keep it from slipping or sliding.
And there's a bunch of different tools. Some people, if you don't have any gription on the bottom, they might be able to buy a gription thing to stick on, so they don't have to buy a new ruler. There's also like those handles. Some people like those that sort of suction right. cup handles.
Sure, sure. And yeah. if possible, if there's a way they could go to their local quilt shop and maybe try some of these mm-hmm. things and see what works for them.
Yeah.
I just want people to know that they don't have to have all those fancy things.
Right, right.
That, you know, even if you have a 6x24-inch ruler and a rotary cutter and that's all you have, you can still cut everything with that.
Yeah. Yeah, perfect, perfect, perfect. All right, now the next thing is that, okay, so people got your ruler straight. What about cutting straight lines? Apparently, you know, it is sometimes hard. I think, you know, you and I have had a lot of practice with this, but when you're starting
right.
out, you're not used to cutting long lines.
Right.
What are some tips there?
Well, try not to, you know, I fold my fabric, my yardage, and I fold it so that I'm cutting selvage to selvage. But I don't fold it in half. I almost fold it like with a third of it over. So it's, you know, it's folded in half once, like it comes off the bolt. But then I fold it again so that I'm not cutting, you know, 22 inches. I'm cutting more like 18 inches.
Mm.
Yeah, that means that I'm cutting four layers. But if you have a really sharp rotary cutter, it shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah. And then are you pressing when you get to the fold at the top? Are you being sure your hand is there to keep it flat?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you have to stop and readjust your hand, you can keep your rotary cutter actually on the mat in the fabric and mm-hmm. don't move that cutting hand, but move the hand that you're holding the ruler very, very carefully. Then mm-hmm. you can readjust your pressure on that ruler.
So let's switch over to the machine.
Okay.
You know, we sew a lot of seams as quilters, and sometimes the seams are very long. And people have asked, how do you sew long seams straight?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Takes practice, for one. And it also takes a machine where you have the proper presser foot pressure. And a lot of people don't consider this. Your machine may or may not have the ability to adjust the presser foot pressure. So how much pressure is the presser foot holding that fabric? If it's too much, that fabric may kind of bow or go in a direction you don't want it to. The other thing, I find that if your machine is working properly, the feed dogs and the presser foot should do the work. You don't have to tug or push or pull. Your hands are there to guide it through straight, but let the machine do the work.
Right.
And, you know, the other thing is maybe control that speed just a little bit. I know a lot of people like to race, you know, but I'm more controlled. That doesn't mean I'm the slowest sewer in the world. I have a good moderate speed, but one that I feel I can control it instead of just, you know, flooring it and making it go as fast as I can. I just try to control it and make sure that I keep control of the strips so that they're not wobbly.
So once you have strips and you have blocks and you're starting to piece everything together, you know, there's lots of things you can read about for which way to press the seam. What are some guidelines
right.
for pressing the seam?
Well, and I think, this is a great one, too, because you quilters, especially new quilters, will hear you always press to the darker fabric. Well, yeah, generally you do. But there are actually times I find it works better to press away from diagonal seams. For example, if you have a half square triangle and you're sewing it to a square, and that square may be a white fabric and you have dark fabrics on that half square triangle, sometimes I actually press towards the square. So I'm pressing the seam away from the diagonal seam in that half square triangle. Yeah, it kind of goes against the general knowledge of, you need to always press towards the dark. But when you can press towards the least complicated unit, or the one that
right.
has the least amount of seams, it will lay flatter.
Right. That's an excellent point, because you want it to lay as flat as possible. You don't want the
right.
seam taking up more than it should.
Right. Okay, exactly.
The other biggie, the award-winning question everybody wants to know, how do you sew without chopping off your points?
Well, and again, that kind of goes way back to the beginning, really, because for each step along the way, all the way back from pressing your fabrics to cutting them, accuracy is key. So when you're sewing each of your units together, you want to make sure to stop and check and make sure you've got the quarter-inch seam allowance left over before you sew it to the next unit that it's going to create the block. And always taking care to maybe true up those units as you go. Say you're piecing a 16-inch block or even a 12-inch block. Sometimes it doesn't hurt to stop and make sure that you're sewing very accurately, that your smaller units, like your half-square triangles or your flying geese or your four patches, measure what they're supposed to measure, mm-hmm. and making the adjustments before you get that block sewn together. And then you won't have so much wonkiness. It'll also help you match those points and make sure that you're not chopping them off because you left a good quarter-inch seam allowance as you started and progressed through each small unit.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is sometimes I'll flip it so that I can see where that point is, you know, rather than
exactly.
it being underneath, which would maybe make more sense for it sewing-wise to be the underneath part. But if I can flip it so I can see
right.
it, then I know where I'm going.
Exactly, exactly. That's a great point, especially when you're trying to hit that point. The other thing is if you've got an intersection, you always want to try to hit with your sewing machine needle just one thread maybe outside of that point so that when you press the seam to one side and you open the unit or the block up, then the bulk is into that seam and you get the perfect point.
Ooh,
so
that's a good tip.
One stitch away.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good tip. Okay, let's do one more really, really quick.
Okay.
Bulky seams. Do you make them open? Does that help?
Yes, I do, especially when you've got like six fabrics coming together or eight mm-hmm. fabrics. Think about those Lone Stars or the Lemoyne Stars or even pinwheels where you have eight fabrics coming together at a center point. Mm-hmm. I always press the last two seams open. And this is something I've just started doing recently, like within the last couple of years. I actually have a tool that I just swear by. It's called the strip stick, and I will press those last seams open over that, and it is just magic. It makes the block completely flat and takes the bulk out. The other thing that's really good to do is to cut off those dog ears as you go. Don't leave mm-hmm. the dog ears into those seams, because if you've got dog ears left over and they're all coming together to make a point where you've got eight fabrics, that's just too much bulk in the seams. So that's something else you can do to eliminate some of the bulk.
Kimberly, this has been fantastic. Thank you so, so much.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. And these were really great questions that your Facebook readers posted. I really enjoyed going through those and thinking about them.
Yeah, I made you work.
Yeah, that's okay. I enjoyed it. It was very insightful.
So everybody can visit Kimberly out at Kimberly Imo, EINMO.com, and you can see her online. And I thank you very much.
Oh, thanks, Pat. It's always fun talking to you.
This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. Visit American Patchwork magazine at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me at patsloan.com and find me out on the internet, where I hope to see you and see what you're working on. And we will have another show next week. See you then.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.